कुंजा बिहारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जनवल्लभ गिरिवर दारी, जय गोपी जनवल्लभ गिरिवर दारी। यशोरनंदन व्रज जन रंजन, यशोरनंदन व्रज जन रंजन, जमुना तीरा वनचारी, जमुना तीरा वनचारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 8, which is entitled Questions by King Parikshit, Text 16. Pramana manda koshasya bahyabhyantara vedata Mahatam Chanucharitam Varnashrama Vinishchaya Pramana Mandakoshasya Bahyabhyantara Vedataha Mahatam Chanucharitam Varnashrama Vinishchaya Ramana Mandakoshasya Bahyabhyantara Vedataha Mahatam Chanucharitam Varnashrama Vinishchaya.
All right.
charitam vanashrama vinishchaya pranam andakoshasya Pramanam, extent and measurement. Andakoshasya, of the universe. Bahya, outer space. Abhyantara, inner space. Bedataha, by division of. Mahatam, of the great souls. Cha, also. Anucharitam, character and activities. Varna, castes. Ashrama, orders of life. Vinishchaya, specifically describe. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Also, please describe the inner and outer space of the universe by specific divisions, as well as the character and activities of the great souls, and also the characteristics of the different classifications of the castes and orders of social life. Purport. Maharaj Parikshit is a typical devotee of Lord Krishna, and as such, he is anxious to know the complete significance of the creation of the Lord. He wants to know the inner and outer space of the universal form. It is quite fitting for the real searcher of knowledge to know all about this. Those who are of the opinion that devotees of the Lord are satisfied with mere sentiments can find in the inquiries of Maharaj Parikshit good lessons as to how inquisitive a pure devotee is to know things in their true perfection. The modern scientist is unable to know about the inner space of the universal horizon and what to speak of the space which covers the universe. Maharaj Parikshit is not satisfied with only material knowledge. He is inquisitive about the character and activities of the great souls, the devotees of the Lord. The glories of the Lord and the glories of his devotees combined together comprise the complete knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Krishna showed his mother the complete universal creation within his mouth, while she, completely charmed by her son, wanted to look inside the mouth of the Lord just to see how much earth the child had eaten. By the grace of the Lord, the devotees are able to see everything in the universe within the mouth of the Lord. The very idea of the scientific divisions of four classes of human society and four orders of life is also inquired about herewith, on the basis of individual personal quality. The four divisions are exactly like the four divisions of one's personal body. The parts and parcels of the body are non-different from the body, but by themselves, they are only parts. That is the significance of the whole scientific system of four castes and four social orders. The value of such scientific divisions of human society can be ascertained only in terms of the proportionate development of devotional service to the Lord. Any person employed in government service, including the president, is a part and parcel of the entire government. Everyone is a government servant, but no one is the government himself. That is the position of all living entities in the government of the Supreme Lord. No one can artificially claim the supreme position of the Lord, but everyone is meant to serve the purpose of the supreme whole. Umakyam timadandasya ginanjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Shri chaitanya manobhistam stapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam dadati svapadantikam. Vandeham shri guru shri yuta padakamalam shri gurun vaishnavamscha. Shri Rupam Sagrajatan Sahagana Raganatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinobandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanjana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So beg for the blessings of the assembled devotees, disciples of Srila Prabhupada, ask for your blessings. May our words and our consciousness be aligned with Guru Parampara. May Shishi Radha Shyam Sundar, Shishi Balaram, Krishna Balaram, Shishi Gonitai be pleased with all of us hearing Srimad Bhagavatam together. And may all the devotees be benefited by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna. So again, this is Canto 2, Chapter 8, which is entitled Questions by King Parikshit, Text 16. Also, please describe the inner and outer space of the universe by specific divisions, as well as the character and activities of the great souls, and also the characteristics of the different classifications of the caste and orders of social life. So these are questions from Maharaj Parikshit to Shukadeva Goswami. At the beginning of this chapter, King Parikshit, he asked Shukadeva Goswami to speak about the potencies and the narrations of the Supreme Lord. He said, Etat Veditum Ichami, that I'm very eager, I very much want to know about this. And it's not just for himself also. That same verse also says, why does Parikshit want to hear what the glories of the Lord spoken? It says also, Loka Sumangala, and the whole world will be benefited also. How does that work? How is it just by hearing about the Lord, the whole world is benefited? So in the third verse of this chapter, Parikshit also says, Niveshya Manas, because my mind is being drawn, is being fixed on Krishna. So that's the first part. We have to fix our mind on Krishna through chanting, through hearing. But then also it's not complete after that. He says, my mind is fixed on Krishna. And then in the next verse, text 4, what happens by fixing your mind on Krishna? Bhagavan Vishyate Hridi. Then Krishna manifests in the mind. So this is how sadhana works. First we have to put our mind on Krishna, but it's not over with that. Then now Krishna has to manifest in the mind. That is how sadhana works. You know, we're putting our minds on Krishna, we're chanting his name. We can chant the name, that's our part, but then Krishna has to reveal himself in the name. That's his part. He does that when he's pleased, and then it is accomplished, the true contact and the true benefit and the true auspiciousness for everyone. So there's two parts. Rupa Goswami, when he describes what sadhana bhakti is, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he described it in the same way, kriti sadhya bhavet, that first of all we have to engage our senses in the service of Krishna, and our senses should be connected to Krishna, the eyes, the ears, the mind, everything. And then as a result of that, what comes? Bhava, this transcendental emotion will come into the heart. So then we might ask the question, so is bhava generated by the action of the senses? You know, if I actively engage my senses in Krishna, is that what creates bhava? So Rupa Goswami explains, no, this is not how it works. We engage the senses in Krishna's service. And then how is bhava described? Nitya siddhasya bhavasya. Nitya siddha, it's like an eternal, perfect energy of the Lord that then descends onto the senses and into the mind. So we engage the senses, but then when Krishna is pleased and he has an energy that descends, the Vishuddha Sattva energy descends onto the senses, into the mind, and then one experiences this transcendental love for God. So there's always these two things. There's something that we have to do. But we do it very humbly, very sincerely, with devotion, begging for Krishna's mercy. And when he is pleased, then he brings forth, and his energy, his divine nitya siddhasya bhavasya, the eternal perfect energy of the Lord, descends into the heart of the living being. And then they experience love for Krishna. So that requires that we're patient, because, you know, we're chanting so much, we're hearing so much, we're not always experiencing or feeling that. But this is how it works. We keep engaged in the service of the Lord. It's like when you're chanting, you know, sometimes chanting so long, so many rounds, nothing is happening. But this has to happen. We have to keep the focus, just like Parikshit says here, Niveshya Manas, the mind has to be drawn and fixed on the Lord. And then Bhagavan Vishyate Hridi, then he manifests himself. So we keep trying, we keep doing that sincerely. And then every now and then when we're chanting, sometimes by Krishna's grace we can just plug in and have an experience that inspires. When we can still the mind from all its restlessness and just chant and just hear, then there can be a moment. One round, one mantra may get through. And then we feel Krishna's grace. And then all we can do at that point, we can't now cause it again to happen, but we can long for it. This is why Krishna gives us beautiful experiences in Krishna consciousness every now and then, so that our longing increases. He gives it, he takes it away. And then so what do we do with that? Instead of getting upset or disappointed, we say, thank you, Krishna. Somehow I don't deserve anything, but you've given me a little special experience. So let me continue on in your service. You are the master. I am the servant. If you give it again, you give it. If you don't, I will continue on. So this is sadhana bhakti. So therefore Parikshit, he's asking so many questions because again, more and more, he just wants the speaking to continue. There's a beautiful verse in the first canto where Parikshit says, let the snake bird come and kill me now. Whatever creature is coming, let it come. I just want all of you to go on speaking the glories of the Lord. Whether I'm alive or I'm dead, you just go on glorifying the Supreme Lord. He's getting this realization that just the auspiciousness of just hearing Krishna Katha. And he's saying the same here. He's asking Shukadeva Goswami to speak more. He has questions. He has three questions here in this verse, text 16. First, he asked about Andakosha. Anda means like egg or oval shape, and kosha is like a container. So this is a term for the universe. He wants to know about more about this universal creation. Bhagavatam has, you know, 10 subject matters. Other Puranas also have these 10 subject matters. This is Bhagavad Purana. And the Puranas in general speak about similar themes. 10 subjects. And one of those subjects is the universal creation. Bhagavatam teaches us about the inner world, right? The subtle body, there's manas, buddhi, ahankar, atma. That's the inner world, but it also speaks about the outer world. This outer world that we live in, how it all works, how it manifested. So we learn about the small and we also learn about the great simultaneously. It's important to be interested in both. You know, we might think, why is Parikshit asking these questions about the measurements of the universe? After all, right, he just has a few days left to live. If you had a few days left to live, would you ask about how the universe? We think, no, there's no point. Just let me focus on my consciousness and the Atma. But this is there in the Bhagavatam for a reason. We have to learn about the intricacies of the subtle body and the process of devotion. And also the creation. There's something to be said about learning about the greatness of the creation and the impact, the emotional impact that can also have on us when we hear about these things. We'll get new understanding sometimes. And we also see our position in that great creation. It's humbling. You know, you ever see something just magnificent? People go to the Himalayan mountains. And you just look, and it's so great, it feels so powerful, and you feel so small. You feel so humble. So hearing about the creation also can have this effect. This is the value of also hearing about these things. There's so much of it in the Bhagavatam. It's there for a reason. So we may not be scientists and break it down. All right, definitely I'm not scientist to be able to break all these details down. But we still should be eager to hear, just like Parikshit. He wants to know about how this creation manifests, how it works. What is the size? What are the living beings in different places? He has all these questions. And when we hear about these things, it can lessen our self-infatuation. You know, think about how much time in the day are we just in our own minds, thinking about ourselves, this self-absorption. My problems, my life, my plans, my desires. This is called Manodharma, the religion of the mind. It's like it's this kind of self-worship, you know? When we're thinking about ourselves all day long, it's a kind of worship of the self. But we're meant to be worshiping Krishna. So we hear about Krishna and all his powers, all his energies, the creation, how it manifested. We're putting our mind there. And then by putting our mind there, then we have an opportunity that while the mind is there, Krishna could reveal something. Krishna could reveal himself. Vishate, Bhagavan Vishate Hridi. He reveals himself in the heart to one who's eager to hear the Bhagavatam. So Prabhupada encourages us in the first paragraph of the purport. He says, those who are of the opinion that the devotees of the Lord are satisfied with mere sentiments can find in the inquiries of Maharaj Parikshit good lessons as to how inquisitive a pure devotee is to know things in their true perfection. The devotee wants to know, how does this creation work? What is the purpose? So we're encouraged to hear these things, even if we're not so much understanding everything about the creation. So that was the first question. The second question in this verse, Mahatam Chanucharitam. Parikshit also wants to hear about the character and the activities of the great souls. Charitam, like we have Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Charita means character or activities. So Mahatam Chanucharitam. This is what the Bhagavatam is full of. Prabhupada explains that also here. That the complete, he says, The glories of the Lord and the glories of his devotees combined together comprise the complete knowledge of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's also the Chaitanya Charitamrita. What are we hearing about? Lord Chaitanya, his activities, the devotees of Lord Chaitanya. Right? We're hearing about all that. And it's described many times in the Bhagavatam when some pastime is told. Afterwards, it is said, if one just hears this pastime, just by hearing, one will very soon attain love for God. Just by hearing. But there's always a condition, right? So we're hearing. Well, why is it not love of God coming into my heart? There's always this one word. There's always this condition given. Shraddha, with faith. If one hears, you know, the story of Dhruva, the story of Prahlad, if one hears attentively and with faith, then love of God will very soon come. So what is that faith? Because that's the key. We're hearing. What is this Shraddha? That's the real condition for it to actually happen. Shraddha is another thing you can't give yourself. You can't give yourself Shraddha. There's two kinds of faith, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains. There's what he calls Lokika Shraddha, worldly faith. That you can do something about, you know? Like many people, they have faith. I was speaking to my friend recently, a person that I grew up with, and he recently just became... I was never interested in religion, but he recently became Christian and just reached out to me and told me about... I was asking, what happened? This is something you... This is great. You know, this is wonderful. How did you get into this? And he said, well, he started doing research about the historical accuracy of the Bible. And he was finding that it's... You know, it's so much more accurate than he expected. He found all these documents and everybody's pointing to the authenticity of this book, and so he started reading this book. And it helped him enter in. It helped him enter into this world of God consciousness, the world of religion. But still, that kind of faith that is dependent on finding historical evidence is this Lokika Shraddha, is a worldly faith. He told me, well, you know, I'm just convinced because I found 300 and something many, 350 documents that show, that confirm the authenticity of the Bible. And I said, well, what if it was 250? What if it was only 100? What if it was 30? If you opened the Bible and read, would you say, oh, well, you know, the point I was making is that if we're dependent on something external for proof, then our faith can be swayed when that proof, when something is disproven. So it shows that the faith is outside of us. It could be changed if things change outside of me. If suddenly, what if there was only 10 documents saying that the Bible was true? You know, we should have a faith that when we hear truth, something in us recognizes that this is true. Whether it's confirmed by others or not. Whether someone has their logical arguments against it or not. Somehow, I read this and I know this is truth. That's something. That's a gift from Krishna. Otherwise, if it's just, well, it's true because of all these other factors. Someone of great logic or great argument can come and defeat you. Right, if you like, people watch these debates of different religion versus the religionist versus the atheist. Atheists can have great arguments, and then where's our faith? We lost it. We try to be objective, and we hear, I'm going to be very objective and just accept the truth. And then some powerful person who has great arguments presents something else, and oh, my faith is gone. Or I'm struggling now. But devotee, whatever argument comes, whatever is being said, whatever historical evidence, that's good in the beginning. That's preliminary faith. That's necessary. But at some point, this real faith, this is called Paramartika Shraddha. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Paramartika Shraddha means that transcendental faith. If all those supports are taken away, Now, with nothing to hold on to, do you still believe? You still believe, even if all that's taken away. Because Krishna can give you that faith. He can give you that faith where even if it's all taken away and I feel like I have no support, there's a support from within. There's a realization. There's a gift from Krishna within. And it doesn't mean that when you have this transcendental faith that you don't have doubts anymore. You may still have doubts, but the difference is you're not troubled by those doubts anymore. You know, okay, I don't know, I can't understand this, and I have doubts. But you know the fault is within yourself, within the impure consciousness, and not because there's not an answer. So you may have a doubt, right? We still may have, you read something fantastic in the Bhagavatam, and the mind may just doubt it. But you have this transcendental faith, you know, but definitely the answer exists. It is because of anarthas. It is because of my own impurity that I can't catch, I can't realize it. So I still accept. And when you have a worldly faith that's dependent on externals, then when something like that comes up, then we're just totally thrown off track. We may give up Krishna consciousness. We may give up what we formerly believed. So then, how does this transcendental faith come? You cannot give it to yourself. But that transcendental paramartika shraddha is carried in the heart of a pure devotee. They are living from that faith. And when we come in contact with such a person, there's something different about this person. We can feel it. They have that faith, that absolute faith. And by that interaction, by that service, by that connection, it can be awakened in us also. When they are pleased, when Krishna is pleased, when we've shown our sincerity, our devotion. All these things that we need, humility, tolerance, patience, faith, all these things that we need, we should always know there's a worldly version of it, and then there's the true version, which is a gift. It's always a gift by grace. So that's why when we try to be humble just by an effort of our will, what are we doing? We're really just kind of holding back, we're resisting this part of me that wants to not be humble. This part of me that wants to assert myself over others and be superior. It's kind of like you just keep it at bay. Tolerate, right? When we tolerate, you just hold somehow, let me tolerate this person. But so that's what we have to try to do. But at the same time, when true tolerance can come to you as a gift from Krishna, where suddenly, with almost no effort, you're able to tolerate because Krishna is giving His grace and you're not taking offense easily. You just see that this is a soul also, this is a conditioned soul who's also entangled in the material energy just as I am. Let me forgive. Let me tolerate. We're all struggling here after all. I'm no better. You know, that consciousness comes by Krishna's mercy. So, when we see a devotee who has this transcendental faith, then we can experience that something different is operating through them. Something different is operating through them. Bhakti Devi. Bhakti is a goddess, and she has descended into the heart of this person, and this person is being moved by that energy. And then we think, yes, I want that too. I want that for I long for that also. And then with that consciousness, we perform sadhana. With that consciousness, we hear, we chant, we remember the Lord, we serve, we worship. We worship the deity. All this is there. So this is... Therefore, Parikshit, he wants to hear more about the devotees, their character, their activities. We should, when we hear about the Lord and we hear about the devotees and their activities, it should inspire something within us to surrender just a little more. That's the best effect of having the association of an advanced devotee. Something that I should give a little more. I should surrender more. I should make some sacrifice. You ever have that experience? Just being around someone who's very advanced and it's just something in the heart says, a little more, let me give a little more. I'm so inspired by this Krishna consciousness. Yeah, I was with this man the other day. He's a man who's passing away. And he wants to spend a little time. He wants me to come once a week and just read the Bible with him. He's a Christian man. And he has heart failure. And he's able to, you know, still talk and communicate. But he's told me he's lost like 40% of his mind, ability to just speak and just speak freely. He forgets things and he's also has some dementia, things like that. So, but it's nice. He's like, come every week, even just for a half an hour, and let's just read together. He's starting to realize that at the end of his life, he wants to shift his focus unto God. And he told me something interesting just a couple days ago. He said, I'm worried because I know I'm dying soon. God has, you know, blessed me. I've been fine throughout my life and I have my family. And so I feel like it's right that I focus on God now, but I don't feel any closeness to God. It's just something I feel like I'm supposed to do. I feel like there's nothing. He was saying there's no closeness, there's no affection, there's no, but shouldn't I be doing this? So I was telling him, that's okay. Something, you may not feel it, but just the fact that you want to now start to put your mind on God, that's also love, right? Like, you know, you have some, you do some favor for a friend, maybe you're not feeling love, but you have a certain responsibility. This friend is in need, I'm going to just do what I can to help. So I was explaining to him that, you know, this is perfect. You think your God is actually very close to you at all times. Something within us blocks that experience, but the fact that every day what you're doing is perfect, do more of it. You want to hear from the Bible, you want to talk about God, you're somehow being awakened that this is important right now in your life. So just go further and further into that idea and just know that it's very pleasing to God. Because think how pleased God is that you're not feeling it and yet you're still going to Him. We can keep this point for ourselves as well. How pleased will Krishna be with us if we don't feel like doing some of these things, but we still do it? Again, realizing the block is in my own heart, not from Krishna, is right there in the heart. He's super soul. He's with all of us at every moment. So He's very, very close. He's closer than our hands. He's the closest person and thing to us. Because He's right within us. But I don't feel that closeness, so what do? I understand. I understand that, yes, it is not the time for me. There's so many, I have to focus on purification, I have to focus on service. But let me keep drawing my attention on the Lord. So that was good, he appreciated that. So I said, just keep doing what you're doing. And I go see him every Tuesdays and just spend a little time reading some things, some spiritual literature. And he's talking about God and he's asking questions. And in this way, he's preparing himself for dying. So this is the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam gives us so many stories of the devotees, so many beautiful examples that we can learn from. And, you know, in this purport, in this text, there are three questions. And in the purport, there are three paragraphs. And so each paragraph, Prabhupada speaks about one of the questions. So the first question was about the universe. So the first paragraph focuses on that. The second question was about the great souls, their character and activities. Prabhupada focuses on that. He says, yes, the glories of the Lord and the glories of His devotees combined together comprise the complete knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam. And then interestingly, Prabhupada, he combines the first question and the second in his purport by saying, the first question was about the universe, right? And Prabhupada therefore tells the pastime of the universe being within the mouth of Krishna. You know, this Prabhupada is inspired to tell this story because the question was, well, what is this universe? And Prabhupada says, the devotee is so special by the Lord's grace, he sees the whole universe just by looking into the mouth of the Supreme Lord Krishna. By the grace of the Lord, the devotees are able to see everything in the universe within the mouth of the Lord. Okay, and then the third question that I'll just briefly cover here, that's asked in this verse, is about Varnashram. Varnashram Dharma. So Parikshit wants to know about the universe, about the great souls, and also about how Varnashram Dharma truly works and its purpose and all the details of Varnashram. In the fourth canto, Prithu Maharaj is Shaktivesh Avatar, and he is empowered to do what? The Shaktivesh Avatar means empowered by the Lord for a specific purpose. An energy of the Lord enters a particular person, and then they are empowered to do something, to have some mission in this world. So Prithu Maharaj, he was empowered to do what? To perfectly protect and maintain the citizens. That was his empowerment. He was the perfect protector and maintainer of all the citizens. And he did that by carrying out very carefully, very skillfully, the Varnashram system. So there are nice details in that section of the Bhagavatam about Varnashram. Srila Prabhupada would sometimes say that you don't find this word Hindu in any of the scriptures of India. He said the real religion of India, sometimes he would say it is Sanatan Dharma, and sometimes he would say it is called Varnashram Dharma. This is the true religion of India. Not Hinduism. Hindu is a word that was given by Muslims. There's the Sindhu River. And the word S, Prabhupada explains, is not in their alphabet. So Sindhu became Hindu. Those on the other side of the Sindhu River, they were called Hindus. So it has no scriptural basis. So Prabhupada says the real religion of this land of Bharatvarsha is Varnashram Dharma. Sometimes he would say it is Sanatan Dharma. But either way, they are connected. Which means to worship the Supreme Lord through one's occupational duties. This is Varnashram system. You know, it's described, we all have a particular state of consciousness which comes from our interaction with the modes of nature. So because we have a state of consciousness, then we'll be impelled to act in a certain way. But the problem is that material consciousness is polluted, and so the actions are also technically called karma, and it creates reactions. So the Varnashram system is so nice that it takes that into consideration. You have a certain nature, and therefore you're going to act in a certain way. It takes all of those actions and makes them an offering to God. It makes it all sacred by a certain system. By a certain, a good king would be able to implement this system. And just by following nicely, those actions, the karma, is converted into yajna. The karma, the regular action, becomes a sacrifice to the Lord. You need a guru for that. You need the teacher of yajna. Tatviti Panipatena. When the Bhagavad Gita explains that one has to approach a bona fide spiritual master, all the previous verses are about yajna. And then it leads to this point that, but then to do this yajna, to do work that's actually sacrifice and not just karma, then you have to approach the teacher of sacrifice, the teacher, one who knows what sacrifice means, and that is the guru. And one should have questions, one should be humble, and one should offer service to that guru. And then by that process, one can convert ordinary action into yajna, sacrifice, it becomes sacrifice. So that's the Varnashram system. It takes your ordinary inclinations and it links it to a guru, it links it to these spiritual ideas. And in that way, we're uplifted spiritually. So in the Varnashram system, certain guidelines are given. There's a certain formula. The first principle is, okay, you have a certain nature, therefore you'll do a certain work. And it has to be your own work. That's the first principle that's often emphasized. It has to be your own work, not somebody else's work. And that again will be revealed according to our nature. You know, you may be good at many things. Like for an example, you may have the mindset of a manager. You may have somehow the karmic inclination to be good at managing things. So a manager should manage. But sometimes you see managers, when they see others aren't doing their job so well, then they'll also jump into their job. I'll just get it done, I'll just do it. And you're doing another's work. Where actually a good manager should do what they do, manage, and also empower others to do what they do well, and not just also do everything. That's one example of this idea of staying within your own work and not doing somebody else's. In fact, there's a verse in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam that gives a very interesting definition of virtue. What does it mean to be virtuous? You think a virtuous person is, you know, a very noble person, courageous, humble. We think of qualities like that. Bhagavatam gives a very interesting definition of virtuous, virtue. It means steadiness in one's own position. That's virtuous. That's virtuous according to the Bhagavatam. You have a certain position, a certain service, a certain action in life to remain very steady there and just be content. Try to become content there and steady. That is virtue. Why? Because when you're steady somewhere, when you have a certain nature and you're doing that thing and you're steady with it, you give yourself to it, your mind becomes more stable. And if many people are doing it, society becomes more stable. And if my mind is stable and society is stable, now, with a stable mind, I can fix my mind on. Now I can, there can be this transfer from Varnashram and rules and all this work into devotion to the Lord. You see, therefore, Prabhupada says in this purport, the value of such scientific divisions, he's speaking of Varnashram Dharma, can be ascertained only in terms of the proportionate development of devotional service to the Lord. So the whole point of that steady work and doing what you do according to your inclination, and the whole point in getting very steady in life is with a steady mind, now we can engage in service with a steady mind. Now we can start to transfer our activities from material activities to spiritual activities. You know, if you're very steady in your material life, you have a certain integrity and you do your work and you do it well, well, it's very likely now you have good skills to do those things in devotional service. Because that's the idea. And that's why it's useful. That's why it's important. We shouldn't neglect material responsibilities and obligations, because if we neglect them out of just wanting to give it up because it's a botheration, then we're showing a neglectful mind. And guess what? It's just a matter of time before that's carried into spiritual life. You'll become also neglectful because it's showing a certain tendency. So the Varnashram system, people were very committed and loyal to it and stuck to it and followed it very perfectly with the guidance of a good king. In this way, their character developed. They had very good qualities, a dedication. And then by the mercy of a guru, they would understand now this has to be transferred to Krishna. And then it becomes perfect. That is Daivi Varnashram. That is the real purpose of Varnashram, the divine purpose of Varnashram Dharma. Okay, so I think we'll stop here and see if there are any thoughts, comments, questions. This verse, as I mentioned, has three questions, and therefore Prabhupada explains in three paragraphs a little detail of each of these questions. And basically, Parikshit is just wanting to hear more and more about everything related to the Lord. Because as the mind gets drawn to the Lord, then there's the possibility of the Lord manifesting in the mind. You know, think about that. If you're distracted, how can Krishna manifest in your mind? You're completely distracted on something else, so there's no reason for him to do so. But if you make an effort to draw, to put the mind on Krishna, now there's an open channel where he can suddenly manifest himself. This is how chant. This is the idea of chanting. You have to keep repeating the mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. As I get absorbed in that, there's an opportunity now. There's a possibility, Bhagavan Vishyate Hridi, that he manifests on my tongue. I can't manifest him on my tongue, but I can try to put my mind, the devotees are encouraging us to do so, we try, and it's opening something that Krishna can now dance on the tongue when he wants. And the same thing when we hear Bhagavatam, absorb the mind in Bhagavatam, and then Krishna very quickly can manifest in the heart if we give that attention. Any thoughts, comments, questions? Yes, Prabhu.
The mic is dead, you can just repeat the question.
Okay.
So, Varnashram is established when the society is in readiness for it. But if there is no readiness for Varnashram, then that society can cope. Just like in the present situation, we find that Varnashram is going to collapse.
Yeah. Yes.
But Srila Prabhupada wants us to ready our society.
Mm.
But it seems we have not really reached that readiness either.
Prabhu was pointing out that to implement Varnashram, there has to be a readiness within the people, within society. So that's not happening on a large level. We know that. That's not happening in the world. But at least our society should, in a way, become prepared or ready or understand some of the principles of Varnashram. But we find even in our society, not everybody is willing or ready to go in that direction. So that's an important, you bring up an important point. I think it's a big topic, of course, Varnashram Dharma. From my understanding is that at least, you know, it's hard to imagine that we really take hold of Varnashram system in a way where we all are just completely on board and doing everything required, and it seems like a very difficult to accomplish that. But at least we have to understand some of the principles of Varnashram and see how we can implement those. Because the Varnashram system is it's very scientific. It's actually very conducive for spiritual development. But we've lost all the support. You know, imagine that there was a time where the king and the government and everybody, this was fully flourishing. And so being born in such a system, everything was conducive. So we see that's not true today. In fact, the world is going in the opposite direction. It's very difficult to be able to focus on spiritual things. So then what do we do? Well, the way I understand it, or the way I see it is, okay, what are the principles of Varnashram? It may take a little bit of a different form in the present day, but I have to understand the principle, and I have to see. I'll give an example. The Varnashram system, at 50 years old, it was required. Now one go to the forest, Vanaprastha. And this was actually done. It was so, everything was so meticulous and followed so nicely that things actually worked perfectly in that way. So now think about today, if we just, that's the instruction from Varnashram, you know. We have to think about our situation today, but we may realize we can't do that. If I go to the forest, I probably... Personally speaking, I'd probably die in a couple weeks or something. you know, just whatever, if I tried to live in that way. But there's a principle there that at a certain age, let's take away 50 now, because that's going to be hard for us to follow that perfectly. But after you lived your life and you've had children and you've worked in this world, and at a certain age, you should now wind down all your material activity and now give a deeper focus to Krishna, to going on pilgrimage, you know, to go to these places, to take shelter. Maybe it's not 50. Maybe I do this because of my upbringing. Maybe I'm doing it at 70. Maybe beyond that. You know, whatever it is. So the Varnashram has all these very exact details, and we can't expect that to be the whole devotee community to embrace all those details. But if we can't push aside the principles, because they're very valuable. So I think the more we speak about Varnashram and present it maybe in a way like this, and devotees will see, well, actually this will be beneficial for me to understand this a little more deeply. Maybe that does something to create some of that readiness. Because nothing in the Varnashram system is arbitrary. Sometimes you hear rules, even in the Bhagavatam, you know, like it said that the man can marry a woman from a lower caste, but a woman should not accept a man from a lower caste. Now you think, why all these strange rules? It seems like somebody just had some ideas. But all the rules can be traced back to metaphysical principles. All the rules are very, that's why Prabhupada would often say, it is very scientific. It is not arbitrary that someone else just thought, let's just do it like this. There's a psychology that's understood, and there's a spiritual benefit that's understood. So even all those rules that sound very strange within Varnashram, we should know they have their origin in metaphysics, which is spiritual principles. And it comes down, and then because of that understanding from above, then certain rules are given that will be conducive for spiritual advancement. So before we dismiss all those things that we hear that seem a little strange, we have to rather seek the essence and see what is the principle here. It will actually benefit us if we catch those principles and then see how to apply them today. Anyway, it's a big topic, you know, lots of devotees have some great things to say about that. Those are just my personal thoughts, but yes, Prabhu.
Yeah. Ashram might be easier to follow. So if I
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even the ashram is becoming difficult in some ways. The varna and the ashram. You know, just imagine. It's hard to imagine, but 50 years, 100 years from now, and the way the world is going. But there are principles within all these rules, and somehow those have to be realized by us because they will help us. Ashram is never easy. Yeah, Varna, you know, is tough too because, yeah, we see, like you said, things have collapsed. But those principles are still eternal principles. There's still some life there, and we have to ourselves understand what's being said and why, and that will help us. Yes, Prabhu.
I think it's still going on. It's just
less. Yes. Varnashram?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, things are going on. In fact, you know, here we are, and there are different devotees doing different work, and there are different ashrams. It's still there. And it will remain there if we do understand the reason why and the principles. It can remain there. If we lose, everything becomes mechanical with some time when you lose. You know, why did it collapse in India? It's like the spiritual root of it was taken out. And therefore, it just becomes castes, and people are fighting and disagreeing. You know, and all this terrible things are happening in the name of, you know, the caste system. Of course, we all know about that. But it's because the spiritual principles and the root of it has been taken out, and now you have a mechanical material system, and that's going to create nothing but chaos.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah, I was just arguing something about that this morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, well, at least according to that conversation, those energies are always there, and that's what makes human society. It's
yeah. Yeah.
I mean, just for instance, people get married, people are students, right. People do all these things that are hard, and we engage it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just one angle, because like I said, it's a huge topic.
Yeah. Yeah, no, thank you. It's true. Very true. So, thank you all so much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Srila Prabhupada Ki.